From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. Well, with October starting to wrap up, that means one thing. We're getting closer to movies that want to be considered for awards season actually hitting the theaters. So joining us today to talk more about that, as well as what we can watch this weekend, is our very own Morning Edition host and resident movie critic, George Prentice. Hi, George.
Hi, Gemma.
Okay, so let's start with there's maybe a little bit of Oscar buzz about a movie that we could see this weekend?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of Oscar buzz swirling around someone who already has a couple of statuettes on her mantle, and that is Cate Blanchett. And she's pretty amazing when you think of her career and all that she's done, right? Light comedy, one moment she's on The Simpsons, the next moment she's Elizabeth, right? And everything in between. She has two Oscars, and her new film is called Tar, T-A-R. It is the last name of the character that she plays. She is the conductor, a world-famous conductor, of a philharmonic, and indeed she is driven. We are introduced to her as an EGOT, which, as you know, is a winner of an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. But it is a power play in every sense, and you will get an indication of it in this little clip as she's being interviewed at the beginning of the film, and you can imagine her trying to describe all the power, if you will, that she holds in her hands.
Time is the thing. Time is the essential piece of interpretation. You cannot start without me. See, I start the clock. Now, my left hand, it shapes, but my right hand, the second hand, marks time and moves it forward. However, unlike a clock, sometimes my second hand stops, which means that time stops. Now, the illusion is that, like you, I'm responding to the orchestra in real time, making the decision about the right moment to restart the thing or reset it or throw time out the window altogether. The reality is that right from the very beginning, I know precisely what time it is and the exact moment that you and I will arrive at our destination together.
It's so interesting when she talks about, the illusion is yours, that indeed it's more of a rhythm when in fact it's all here in my hands. And what's interesting is that the orchestra that she conducts, like many orchestras, is a bit of a democracy. But by no means does she agree to that. And as a matter of fact, there's a scene in the film where she's playing with her daughter in her bedroom, and they line up all of the daughter, and the daughter's about 6 years old. They line up all of her stuffed animals, right? And they line them up as if they are members of an orchestra. And Cate Blanchett leans into the daughter and she says, "Remember, this is not a democracy." It is a psychological thriller. There are things from Tar's past that come to haunt her. Quite frankly, the movie's about 15 minutes too long. It runs about 2 hours, 34 minutes. I think that's a little too long for a movie nowadays that's not an epic. That said, it's Cate Blanchett. You can bet your house on the fact that she will be up for Best Actress Oscar for this. And right now, she's probably a front runner. So is she worth the price of admission? Absolutely. Tar opens this weekend. If you like Cate Blanchett, you'll probably really like this film. If you love Cate Blanchett, this is a must-see.
Okay, and it opens this weekend, right, George?
It does. It opens at the Flix this weekend, and I know a lot of people have been asking about the film, so it goes nationwide this weekend, and that includes here in Boise.
So it's interesting, George. I read a little bit about this. So it's not a true story, yet it's kind of the idea around pop culture and celebrity.
It is, but it's also the dynamic of a female in a very high-profile role, And the writer-director, Todd Field, said this film would not have been made if Cate Blanchett wasn't in it. It was written with one person in mind because what he did not want was to create this role of, oh, my gosh, she's just this power-hungry person, et cetera, when, in fact, I don't think we would use those descriptions if a man was in that role.
Of course not.
And so I think there's that dynamic that goes on, but – it is a driven artist. And you know, and I know people who this, I mean, it's the universe revolves around them, right? And it's part of their art. It's part of their, let's just say the word genius. So, and there's probably very few actresses who could pull this off. Cate Blanchett would probably be near the top of that list.
Yeah, she's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Okay, so I love a good documentary. Mm-hmm. You have a recommendation.
I do, and this is one you can see at home. I just saw it last night. It premiered last night on HBO. It is called A Tree of Life, and it is it's a wonderful documentary, and it chronicles those impacted by the 2018 Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. You may remember when a gunman entered a synagogue in Pittsburgh, and wreaked havoc. And what's so interesting is that this particular documentary is not exploitive. And as a matter of fact, it goes light on politics and very deep on humanity. So let's take a listen.
It was a rainy morning.
We all went down into our sanctuary space.
I turned around and there was the man with the gun.
Shot fired. They have an active shooter in the building.
We got a text that just said active shooter at Tree of Life Synagogue.
Several persons barricaded inside.
Jerry and I looked at each other. Well, Jerry's a doctor, I'm a nurse, and thought that somehow we could be helpful. So we moved in the direction of the gunfire.
Suspect's talking about all these Jews need to die.
There's a great fear among people that the culture of white America has been diminished.
These groups are emboldened, they're empowered, and they're vocal.
The days when synagogues just leave their doors open, I think those days are gone.
And what's interesting is that, and you may know this, Gemma, is that families of people who were slain in other shootings around the U.S., now go to the scene of the next shooting. So we see families from of students who were killed at Virginia Tech or Robb Elementary down in Uvalde, Texas, families from Sandy Hook, the Parkland school shooting, and all of these people who come and spend time with survivors outside the synagogue. And there's this unspoken language, unfortunately, that they can share, and this look that they can share with one another, because they have now become a part of an unfortunate fraternity. But it is a lovely film. It is certainly one of the best documentaries of the year. It is called A Tree of Life, and it is playing exclusively on HBO Max. It premiered last evening. Make the rounds in film festivals and has been shown in some theaters. So, yes, this will be eligible, and I would fully expect it to be nominated for Best Documentary of the Year.
All right. So you said HBO was the place to watch it, which is, of course, a streaming service. And George, all kinds of news, right, coming out about some streaming services and the cost.
Yeah, something's in the air, and I guess we should have seen this coming, but almost every streaming service has announced price hikes. So this week, Apple announced that Apple TV Plus is going up to $6.99 a month. That's up $2 a month. The annual goes up to $69. It's previously $49.99. So that's Apple. Netflix had two announcements. One is that, yes, they're going to go through with, and they say they've got the technology where they are going to charge us a monthly fee if we share our login information. They've been threatening this for some time. They say they know how to do it. They will offer people to set up tiers if indeed you want to share your password, but they will start charging next year a monthly fee. Also, Netflix is about to do something in a few days, something they said they would never do, and that is advertising. And so they are going to have now a fourth tier of Netflix. Netflix with ads will be $7 a month. That's about $3 less than the cheapest ad-free Netflix membership. So, so that's interesting. Disney Plus is will start charging $8 a month for its ad-supporting subscription and $11 a month for its ad-free membership. And that will start the first week of December. And then, of course, there's Hulu and Paramount Plus, HBO Max. So now every one of these streaming services will have an ad-supported tier. And Netflix is joining that club. So to that end, you could say, oh, their price is going down. But anyone who watches these with ads knows that these ads come up at the most inappropriate places. Just when like you're in the middle
of
the crown or what have you.
Right.
We're putting
this ad in.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Netflix, I mean, read the headlines, right? Their subscription base is stagnant. They added some in the last quarter, but they have lost a lot in the last year. And they think that this is a way to get people to join them. It's very interesting. We'll see. It may be a loss leader because some people may say, no, I don't want Netflix at all.
Well, so here's my question too, George. I think in particular with this password sharing, and maybe I don't know if you fully understand how this works. So if you don't, that's fine, because I certainly do not. I was reading about this. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. So does that mean that we have one Netflix subscription in our house, right? There's four of us.
Right.
Does that mean that I have to like pay a subscription fee for everyone in my house to be able to use the same password on different devices? Because, see, that is what will stick in my craw, and I'm going to have a problem with that.
I would think not. My guess is that it will have everything to do with IPP, which is to say at a different location, coming through a different router. They say they've got the technology. Swell, that's great. But I'm sorry, doesn't every other streaming service have to deal with this as well? So, but Netflix says, yeah, but nobody steals from us more than, than Netflix,
Hopefully.
So it's like, well, stealing, really?
I will tell you this. I mean, Hulu, and you and I have talked about this, Hulu does this thing where you have a certain, I think it's like four times a year, you can switch the IP address on it. So if you go on vacation, let's say, and you want to log into your Hulu account, but then once you do that, then it randomly stops working at your own house. Trust me, I've had to call them numerous times. But they at least work with you when you say, hey, we were on vacation. I used it. I should get that, that back. I'm not sharing it with someone. But I think this runs into all kinds of issues, George. And
I think you're spot on. I think it's going to be a matter of how they roll this out and how they communicate this. There's nothing wrong with having a family plan. But I think that using a hammer on customers, this is probably not the best time to be doing that, Netflix.
Yeah, no kidding. Yep. Okay, we're going to take a break here in a minute, but I quickly want to get to the fact that Halloween is Monday. So any suggestions for Halloween fun, but for families, George, because I have to say there are certain things that I just, I want my 10-year-old to go to sleep at night.
Absolutely. So let's just go to it. Let's listen.
Is Linus taking me to the party? That stupid blockhead of a brother of mine is out in the pumpkin patch making his yearly fool of himself.
Boy, is he strange.
But maybe there is a great pumpkin.
Every year, Linus misses tricks or treats. And then the Halloween party.
He'll never learn.
Do I get to go trick-or-treating this year, Big Brother?
Sure, Sally.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. How do we do it?
All you have to do is walk up to a house, ring the doorbell, and say tricks or treats.
Are you sure it's legal?
Of course it's legal.
I want one to be accused of taking part in a rumble.
the candy for my stupid brother?
He couldn't come with us because he's sitting in a pumpkin patch, waiting for the great pumpkin. It's so embarrassing to have to ask for something extra for that blockhead Linus. I got 5 pieces of candy.
I got a chocolate bar.
I got a quarter.
I got a rock.
Trick or treat!
Gee, I got a candy bar.
Boy, I got 3 cookies.
Hey, I got a package of gum.
I got a rock.
Trick or treat!
I got a popcorn ball.
I got a fudge bar.
I got a pack of gum.
I got a rock.
56 years. Oh. 56 years. It never gets old. It's the
George,
great.
It just takes me back.
And oh. I got a rock. It's so, I love it. By the way, speaking of streaming services, this year you will only be able to see It's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown on Apple Plus. They're not going to put this on free television anywhere. So Apple Plus has the rights, and if you want to see it, it's on Apple Plus. But 56 years, it still holds up pretty good.
Oh, it really does. There is a movie that you were on a while ago talking about, saying it's a must-see, and this is the film The Whale, which it has Idaho ties, but you got to sit down with the writer?
Absolutely. Samuel D. Hunter, who was born and raised in Moscow, Idaho, and has written plays, A Bright New Boise, which won the Obie in New York, and wrote the play The Whale. Back in 2013, and it has now been adapted, and he wrote the screenplay for it, for the big screen, and it is one of the most talked about films of the year. It has garnered standing ovations at every film festival in Venice and Toronto. I was at that screening. It is really, really something, and it tells the story of a 600-pound middle-aged Charlie, played by Brendan Fraser. And folks, you've probably heard about this performance from Brendan Fraser. And he plays this heartbreaking person, 600 pounds, and he's trying to reconnect with his 17-year-old daughter. And that is the backdrop, but it does take place in Moscow, Idaho. And for those of us who look through the lens of being Idahoans, there's a lot of this that is familiar. And so I did have a conversation with Sam Hunter. We will share the full conversation with you on this broadcast as we get closer to the film's premiere, which will be in December. But Gemma, I couldn't wait to share some of this. So first of all, I asked Sam about the origins of this story, the backdrop of this character, Charlie.
I had a few false starts, and then it wasn't until I put some more personal stuff on the line and wrote a play that definitely was my most vulnerable play I'd written to date, you know, about this. You know, I grew up gay in Idaho and I self-medicated with food for a good long while in my 20s. And so once I kind of added that to the mix, then the play really started to emerge.
Well, I think I would think that the greatest gift is when this has wide release. I can't wait for more people to see it so I can have a lot of conversations with them about this. In particular, obviously, the lens that we look through here in Idaho, but it's an American story. And we're just weeks away from a lot of people getting to know Charlie. And my experience was I instantly recognized him.
Yeah, that's hopefully what it is that, you know, whatever prejudices or judgments that some people might bring to this film, that, you know, 7 minutes in, you know, largely due to Brendan's incredibly nuanced and lived in performance, those prejudices just begin to melt away. And that's always how I hoped the play would work. And I'm so happy that the film seems to be working in that way as well.
Well, it most certainly does work in every way possible. And this performance will get Brendan Fraser an Oscar nomination. And I think there's a really, really good chance that Sam Hunter and his screenplay will also be nominated. So I had to ask about award season.
Well, whether it is private or public conversation, indeed it's there. And there's that thing called award season. I mean, is that something that's just over there? It's going to happen. You're going to be, you are a part of that conversation. Do you have any particular feelings about that? Do you embrace it? Do you say, oh, it is what it is, because there's not much you can do about it?
It's just so, it's so new for me. You know, it's a world that is so, so new, mm-hmm. which I'm kind of glad that I don't know much about it, because I can meet it with kind of excitement and wonder and just kind of like whatever happens, happens. And I really mean that, because I never thought that I would be in a place like this. You know what I mean? Like, all I ever wanted to be was a working playwright who could make enough money to have a family and health insurance. And I've had that, which has been like an incredible gift that I am deeply grateful for every moment of every day. The fact that I get to be, that this is what I can do for a living. It's a crazy gift. So like the other stuff is, I mean, it's great, but it just feels so far away or theoretical or something. It's hard for me to even wrap my mind around.
It will be more than theoretical come 2023. And Gemma, our audiences are responding to this movie with so much emotion. And of course, as Sam Hunter just referenced, Brendan Fraser's amazing performance, but it is this story. And I know that when people see this film, they're going to think, oh gosh, I know this guy. And whether it's a man or a woman, a male, female, it doesn't matter. We know Charlie, and heartbreak and disconnection. And, you know, how did he get to where he was? You know, I mean, he was once a teacher, right? And, but yet, you know, he came into a spiral and he did not disclose that he was gay. And his daughter didn't know that. And he lost this relationship with his family. And so this story picks up with him trying to reconnect with his daughter, who finds it very difficult to forgive him, let alone recognize him. It is really, really something. So for us to look at this now with this extra layer of Idaho on it, The Whale, oh my goodness, I can't wait for you to see this film.
Well, and you know, George, it is one of those things, I think, when understanding like where it is based, right? Mm-hmm. And not that there are, you know, we see the lack of understanding when it comes to the LGBTQ plus communities. In particular, I think when you go to a place that is very conservative, very red, there's an added layer, I think, sometimes on that of maybe just a misunderstanding, like a misunderstanding or a not understanding or a fear of what you don't know. And do you see that in the movie? I mean, does that kind of come to fruition at all?
Absolutely. And I'm not going to tell you how it ends because it has a very particular ending. But the conversations that people were having as they were heading into the lobby after this film, you know, just shaking their heads like, wow, it's like, I know this guy. I think I think I knew someone just like this.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I can certainly relate to this. And it is about, you know, disconnection. And where does that come in someone's life? And when is it possible to save another human being? And the only answer is it should always be possible. It should always be possible. It's never too late. Have we seen films with people who struggle with weight or addiction or sexual identity? Absolutely. But it is this performance by Brendan Fraser and this particular script by Sam Hunter that pushes through and makes this extraordinary and truly makes it an experience. And it's one of those moments where it's less of a film and it transcends the art form. It's more about poetry. It's more about almost like a psalm. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is the human experience. And this is why we go to the films, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, George, very quickly, because I have to wrap up, when does The Whale open?
Right now it opens first week of December. Distributors are being very wise. They were going to open it earlier, but one by one, they're going to these film festivals, and audiences and critics are just over the moon over this film. So you will start seeing ads for this probably around Thanksgiving, and then it opens here as it does across the nation the first week of December. Folks, do not miss this movie on so many levels. Don't miss this movie.
Well, thank you for giving us some insight into this as well, George. As always, it is just such a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much, Gemma.
Absolutely. We've been talking with our very own Morning Edition host and resident movie critic, George Prentice. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.